Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian. What a opening playoff weekend we had. A record six playoff games in the wild card weekend. A lot of fun and some craziness, obviously Sunday night with how the Steelers-Browns game started, but coming up, we'll chat with Mr. Executive Director about how the books did and some fun kicking us for loser moments. Obviously, we had plenty of them. Also, how Bama took care of business. And we're also checking in with NFL analyst Damien Woody, two-time Super Bowl champ. Obviously, has tons of playoff experience and always good insight and wisdom. We'll ask him about each of the four playoff games coming up in the division round. So definitely want to pick his brain. Just want to thank everyone for all their time in the college football year. Had put a bow on that. I tweeted out all the guests we've had. Just thanks to everyone. And thanks to David Purdom for recapping last weekend. And then if you want a last-minute NHL stuff, go check out Monday's pod. The tail end, the 19-minute mark, Emily Kaplan and Greg Wyshynski. Great job covering the NHL for us. You see them on Daily Wager as well. And go listen to that season preview with some futures, some MVP sleepers as well. So it's not just time-stamped. It doesn't, the shelf life goes on beyond opening night. So let's get to the pod. Before we do that, I want to tell everyone about ESPN podcast, the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Mina talks all things football with her unique brand of humor and insight. Her friends join each episode to talk about the NFL's latest storylines, along with her football loving dog Lenny, making frequent contributions. Make sure you download and subscribe to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, as well as Behind the Bets on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kicking is for losers.
One of these days, Murray, kicking is for losers will become a thing of the past, a distant memory where we'll have to remind each other, remember when, but that we are nowhere close to that because we lost count of all those situations this past weekend.
Do you remember, I think it was about a year ago, some guy tweeted at me specifically saying, when are you going to stop making these same jokes about kicking and punting? And I said, I'm not going to ever stop until the team stop doing it. And that's never going to happen. I thought this weekend, this super wild card weekend, was maybe the worst example I've ever seen of teams making just boneheaded decisions to kick field goals or punt in critical games at points where there was no other choice but to go for it. And the thing that surprised me the most was who the coaches were. Coaches that I really respected, like Mike Tomlin and Mike Vrabel. I thought those guys were good coaches. And they totally blew it for their teams this weekend, last weekend.
Yeah, I was part of the new megacast for ESPN during the playoff game, which was Ravens-Titans. And we were doing it with the NFL live crew. So, like, they would talk with, like, Orlovsky, Mina Kimes, and Spears, and Laura Rutledge was hosting. And, you know, as the plays were going or the drives were taking place, they would break down whether it was, like, analytics, and Orlovsky would break some stuff down with a quarterback's perspective. And then they would give it to us, like, between possessions or punts, and we would update the line, the change of possession, things like that. So when Vrabel decided to punt in Baltimore, they were giving it to me after that third down incompletion because, well, certainly, like, you know, what were the odds during this fourth? And, like, we were all stunned. There were seven of us with a microphone, and we all, like, groaned when they decided to punt. It was quite remarkable. We thought it was a foregone conclusion.
Even John Harbaugh, I know Harbaugh got the win, but there was a sequence there right before halftime where they got a third down. They completed a pass out to about midfield. There was about 50 seconds left. They had two timeouts left. And instead of calling one of their timeouts, they ran everybody up to the line of scrimmage, didn't spike it, called a play. Lamar Jackson threw a backwards pass, and the guy caught it, which he shouldn't have, got tackled for a loss, and then they called timeout. It was just a horrible sequence that nobody will ever remember because they won.
Yeah, and Jackson certainly botched some of that.
Oh, I know, but I think they should have used a timeout there.
Correct.
Obviously, right? And then obviously, you know, the worst thing, though, was Tomlin. Punting down 28-0 on Cleveland side of the field. And then, of course, the punt when they were down by 12 on 4th-and-1. And Cleveland gets the ball back and goes right down the field, scores a touchdown, and Cleveland now is through to the divisional playoffs. Mike Tomlin and Mike Vrabel cannot be criticized enough for their decision-making over the weekend.
Yeah, so I think we should rename the 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2 in opponent territory as the Vrabel, because we have the Narduzzi. We have the Narduzzi, which is the, like the field goal from the 1 or whatever it is. I think the Vrabel is the new one, so we're adding it.
Who would have thought it'd be Vrabel? Vrabel's the guy that went for the touchdown and the win in overtime a couple years ago, I think against Philadelphia. Vrabel's been one of the most aggressive coaches. Before last weekend, I probably would have put him in my top 5 of guys that understood to go for it. I'm in disbelief. He, of all coaches, would do that.
I believe it was Charlie London. I think that was the game. But I think the bigger thing is, I think here's a guy who was outsmarting Belichick a year ago, right? Like, that's more like the context that really applies. It's not even just being aggressive. It's being outsmarting and understanding each situation. We always joke about, like, hey, just grab an 8th grader who's played a bunch of Madden. I honestly think, like, just put a guy who has money on each team and ask them what they want the other team to do. That's really what we should do, is sort of the focus groups and, like, the headsets upstairs. I mean, that's really what should be done. But, look, we're going
to
see more of it.
Go ahead. The only thing I wanted to say about kicking was Frank Reich did everything correctly, and the decisions just didn't work out for him. But you don't want to look at like a results oriented way of thinking about it. He made all the right decisions, and they just didn't play out that way. And
see, I disagree. I think going for two was a no brainer. I don't care that it weren't successful. That was the no brainer. I do think 4th-and-goal on the 4 was, you should kick right there.
Are you talking about the one before halftime?
The one before halftime. Yeah.
I don't agree with that at all. I thought that was the right move because
why?
Because if you don't get it, they pin them back there. Buffalo only got off the goal line because of that long pass where the guy was out of bounds. That guy was a bad call too. That compounded the whole thing. I thought Frank Reich made all the right moves.
Interesting.
And it just didn't work out.
Because I
like pinning the team at the goal line. You kick the field goal, you let them off the goal line. The only reason Buffalo got out of there, I think it was Gabriel Davis. I thought his foot was out of bounds. But I don't know. I definitely would have gone for that there. So I applaud Frank Reich, and big thumbs down to Mike Vrabel and Mike Tomlin.
I agree with you in that we should not be results oriented in the evaluation. Obviously, the 2-point conversion attempt was the right call because you're not trying to tie the game. You're trying to win the game. You have the 50-50 component to overtime and all that in the math equation. But
yes,
that's interesting. So conversation for another day, but I'm glad you own that and not just like, you know, revisionist history, so to speak. So we spin forward. Now we are relegated to just 4 games this weekend. Poor us. No 6. First of all, how'd the books do with that extra playoff game in each day on top of the with the cherry on top of the national championship game?
Well, Saturday we did very well. Very good day for us. We needed the Colts huge. Everybody was on Buffalo.
Yeah.
The Colts ended up being really our biggest decision of the weekend in the NFL games. Big winner for us with Indianapolis covering. And then a big winner at night with the football team covering against Tampa Bay. So we got both those dogs to cover at least. We had a lot of liability rolling to the favorites on Sunday. We lost quite a bit on the Baltimore game, and we lost on the New Orleans game. But we were able to pull some money back with Cleveland winning outright. And then what really saved our weekend, Alabama blowout win. That was the only way we could do well in that game. We had one of our house players had a total of about $200,000 on Ohio State +8 and +8.5. He betted at different numbers at different times throughout the week, but overall he had close to $200,000 on Ohio State. And then we had some big bets on Ohio State money line. We had a guy come in right at the end, bet $40,000 on Ohio State money line. A lot of really big money on the Buckeyes. Alabama blowout win. Blowout win. It was our only way to make money. I mentioned we did lose in the future book on Alabama.
Right.
But we took so many big bets on Ohio State, not just those bets I mentioned, but there were a lot of other big bets on the Buckeyes. All the big money was on Ohio State at our book. And with Alabama blowing them out, we were able to win a bunch of money. And that's a hard thing to do when you're grading the 7th game of a 7-game football weekend. It's hard to make money at all because you're closing out parlays to both sides. So we were very, very happy to come away with what we won on Monday night.
Yeah, chatted with David Purdom on the podcast on Monday, and he's talked about how split all the action was. I did not understand the Ohio State love, but I've been pro-Bama all year, so who knows? Maybe I'm just biased. I thought it was a great situation for Bama, and with Ohio State coming off that emotional win that they basically eyed for a year to target Clemson and to try to play that well and get up for it in a short turnaround. I just thought it was too much to ask, and Bama just too loaded. It's been a crazy run by the Tide. I imagine you're not going to be handing out 5-1 anytime soon on Bama futures.
Lesson learned on that. and my final thought about the whole thing would be, it makes me wonder a little bit about Tua Tagovailoa, because he goes pro, they don't miss a beat offensively, and look at the wide receivers Alabama had last year. They lost Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy to the draft, and they still brought all those guys back, including the Heisman Trophy winner. I'm asking some questions of Tua right now.
I think the Dolphins are too in these Deshaun Watson trade rumors. Let's go to the weekend now, though, because we have some awesome games coming up. Really fired up for these, because it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out with only one team in each conference getting the rest. Obviously, that's a new rule this year at the playoffs, hence we got the 6 playoff games last weekend. But we start with Green Bay coming off the rest. Was 7. It's now 6.5. Rams, a lot of question marks. Jared Goff, thumb, all that. Defense looked great. Aaron Donald figures to play. So what? Any sharp action here?
Yeah, there was a group that we do respect. They took the Rams +7 -110. And now you see that number at 6.5. This is an interesting game. If this game was the Sunday afternoon game, I think you'd see a higher number, maybe a 7, maybe even a 7.5 by Sunday. Because then you'd have everything running into Green Bay in that fourth game of the four-game weekend. But because it's the early game, you're getting more of a true number. There's definitely sharper players on the Rams, but the books are going to need the Rams because so many of the moneyline parlays and teasers this weekend are going to start with the Packers, and the public just always bets the Packers for the most part. So we'll need the Rams pretty big, but not nearly as much as we would need them if it was the last game of the weekend.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's going to be fascinating how it plays out. I'm curious if the Packers or the Rams can channel sort of what Dalvin Cook did a couple weeks ago or a handful of weeks ago against, you know, the Packers at Lambeau and ran all over them. That was like the big loss for the Pack during that stretch.
Well, what did we learn about the Rams on Saturday? I think we learned that they feel they'd rather have Wolford in there than Jared Goff. Because they started Wolford because they said Goff was hurt. But if Goff was really that hurt, why did they only carry two quarterbacks into the game?
Very good.
I think that they would rather have Wolford in there, but they couldn't come out and say that. We'll see. It sounds like it's probably going to be Goff on Saturday. I've never been a big Jared Goff fan.
No,
he's terrible. To put it nicely, I've never thought much of him, but really impressive performance from the Rams defensively. And I know Green Bay is missing some key guys on the offensive line. Bakhtiari's out. Good luck blocking Aaron Donald. That's my final thought on that game.
Baltimore at Buffalo. Should be a frigid one at the Ralph Saturday night. Ravens may have flipped the switch. They seem like they got things going. But then again, it's one big run for Lamar Jackson, although the defense definitely looks sound. It's a high total. They're all high totals, frankly. I guess L.A. Green Bay is not that bad. But this one's 50, consensus. Anything here that you guys have taken?
Well, this is an awesome game. I mean, isn't this clearly the best game of the weekend? This is by far the game I'm most excited to watch. Baltimore, you could say they righted the ship against Tennessee. They played very well defensively, but how much of it was just Tennessee? Terrible play calling. They kept trying to establish the run when it was clear that it wasn't working. And then we already talked about Vrabel's very poor decisions of to kick or to punt instead of go for it. So I don't know how much of it was Tennessee kind of gifting the game to Baltimore. I guess we'll find out. We'll find out on Saturday night. No real sharp action to report. We opened Bills 2.5. We're still there. Great two-way. I think this game will be the least or the smallest decision of the weekend for the books because there's going to be a lot of people looking to bet both of these teams. Both these teams are really trendy teams right now, and there's going to be money both ways.
I'm seeing some -2.5, 20s, some 15s. Do you think it touches 3 at all?
We're at 2.5, 20. I think if you go to 3, you're going to get the sharp guys saying, that's my buy point. Do I think it's going to happen? Yeah, probably. Probably. But I do think that when it does happen, it'll disappear quickly.
Yeah, I know some guys, some sharp people were on -2, -10, and I would imagine they might buy back even at 3. Just that key number that we always talk about, 14% of games over the last 5 years decided by exactly 3 points. We go to Sunday, and this is interesting, right? Like, the Chiefs not only get the bye, but they rested starters in week 17. And we've seen teams in the past start slow. And this Kansas City team obviously has had some nail biters the last month or so. And I'm not saying Cleveland's going to win, but you wonder if laying 10 makes sense here.
Well, we saw, you know, we saw some offshore books popping up like 7.5 on Kansas City, right? Like before the AFC games were even over, before the Steelers game was even over. And we thought that number was so crazy because the Steelers were only laying 6 to the Browns on Sunday night. Obviously, that was a bad number, but I think this number has to be at least 9.5, 10. When you consider Kansas City coming off of their bye week, how good Kansas City is offensively, I do believe that Kansas City has probably been holding some back a little bit here the last couple of months, cruise control right into the postseason. This is a big stage for Cleveland. I'll stop short of saying I think Cleveland is going to be a square dog because I'm seeing a lot of money on Kansas City as well. But usually the public will get carried away a little bit backing a dog, playing a team that's coming off of a bye week because they just saw that team win a wild card game. And that team that had a bye the previous week is kind of out of sight, out of mind. I think there's going to be a lot of public support for Cleveland too.
Okay. Okay. My play for the Bonanza is in this game.
Do you remember two years ago, Indianapolis shut out Houston in the first wild card game of the weekend in Houston. And then the following week, it was Indianapolis at Kansas City. And everybody bet Indianapolis like crazy. And Kansas City handled them pretty easily. I don't think it's going to be quite like that, but it kind of reminds me of that game.
We're always reminded this weekend when the team that had the bye is just like sharp and fresh. And it's like, oh, yeah, the bye is definitely a reward for this late in the season. These teams who play this physical sport and need that sort of break. It will be interesting. Now, you said Buffalo-Baltimore figures to be the game you're most excited to watch. A lot of others would say Tampa Bay-New Orleans. And makes sense. But Morty Seinfeld looked great Sunday night, Saturday night, today, but they did not get the cover. So 0-5 ATS in primetime this year for Brady. But he looked great. Zip on the ball, all that good stuff. Drew Brees looks his age, but Saints get the cover. Kind of wild ending, obviously, with the walk-off touchdown. I'm surprised this line is only 3, given what's happened in the regular season. But then again, I know what the teams have looked like the last month or so, but still, I am surprised, given New Orleans' kind of dominance in the regular season over the Bucs.
Definitely the number we talked about the most was this one here, Tampa Bay, New Orleans. We had guys in the room that made it New Orleans 6. We had guys in the room that were as low as 3, 3.5. I made it 4.5. I was playing Switzerland with my number on that one. We opened 5.5, and the money just came on Tampa Bay instantly. I mean, right after we turned the betting on, guys were flooding in bets on the Buccaneers. Right now, we have New Orleans -3, -120. I do think there might be some value on New Orleans if you can get it at -3, -110, which you can do at a few books in Las Vegas. Although I have to agree with you, Brady played very well, and that's a good Washington defense. And Brady, he had some good zip on the football. Some very accurate throws. You know, it's not like the Buccaneers defense played that overwhelmingly well. Washington scored some points. You got to give credit to Tom Brady for that performance on Saturday night.
Food for thought for this Washington defense. We had what we now call Uncle Sal on Sundays on our Daily Wager show, or Saturday in this case, and when he talks gambling stats. Washington's defense, maybe a little bit more bark than bite. Their numbers in the division, so against the NFC East, horrible opponents, they were outstanding, like average like 15 points per game surrendered, passing yards, all that. Outside the division, pretty bad. It was like, yeah, not good. So as much as we are impressed with Washington's defense, and it's obviously a good defense, you know, but it may not be that good based when you take out the NFC East and facing, you know, some of these quarterbacks, whether it be Colt McCoy, Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, all these kind of second tier, third tier QBs. But I had the under, I was sitting there just watching these points go up. I'm like, well, that makes sense. I will say Heinicke was better than Alex Smith would have been. You know, that's one of the reasons I like the under was Alex Smith component, because it checked down on Heinicke, made some plays, but Brady was awesome. And it'll be interesting to see how this game unfolds for sure.
good front group on that Washington defense, but the back end of their defense is not very good. And I know it's easy to say that now, but I can tell you we were laughing in real time as the Buccaneers Washington line went up after Alex Smith was ruled out. Because we all, I'm not saying that any of us thought Heinicke was going to play as well as he did. I'm not saying that. But we all felt that he was an upgrade over Smith. Because if you watched that game last Sunday night, Smith couldn't even move. He couldn't move around at all.
Right.
So we definitely thought Heinicke would give Washington a slightly better chance. And we laughed at that number moving up to 10 from 8.5, 9 because Smith was out. That was a move that went the wrong way, in my opinion.
But I took 4. I laid the 4 with New Orleans. I thought that was going to be the best number. And literally like 20 seconds later, it's 3.5. I'm like, oh God, I misread the market. So hopefully.
Well, who's the public looking to bet on? They're looking to bet on Tom Brady as a dog. Drew Brees can barely throw the ball more than 10 yards.
Don't the sharps move the number?
Yeah, but you've got to know. Yes, they do. What they are doing, those guys, those sharp bettors, they're anticipating all the money coming in on Tampa Bay. They're taking those numbers early, and they're going to play it back at the end. And they are absolutely correct. They're taking 5.5, 4.5, 4, because they knew it was going to go down, and then they'll get out of it at the end, is my guess. I mean, I think that's what they're doing.
It's funny. I was talking to a sharp right before the lines were posted. He's like, I think I might be able to get 7. You know, you said in the room you heard 6. I was like, well.
Oh, yeah. There were multiple people in the room saying 6.
So when I saw 4, I was seven like, never came. I got to grab. You know, I was like, I don't think it's going to be that high. The Bucs look too good the last couple of weeks. But I think their defense is very vulnerable. I think we might have a shootout here. You know, you say that.
Highest volume game of the week. And one of the things we like about it is we're happy that that game is the fourth game because there's going to be money on both sides. So we won't end up in one of these jackpots where we have this huge liability like we did last year. In the Philadelphia-Seattle game, which was the last game of the wild card weekend, we needed Philadelphia for our lungs because everything was rolling into Seattle from all 4 games, and then Wentz gets hurt in the first quarter. Disaster. This game is going to be good two-way right. I don't expect us to end up in some huge liability jackpot, whereas if you flip the NFC games and Rams-Packers was the last game, we would need the Rams for a huge number.
Where do we stand on the 6:40 p.m. kickoff time for Morty? It's right there.
I don't
it's right
know. There.
Is that prime time or is that?
I think that's prime time. Okay. I'd say that's prime time. I mean, when did Morty Seinfeld complain about them ordering lunch too late? Wasn't it like 5:15 or ordering dinner too late?
I don't remember. You have a better Seinfeld recollection.
He's like, if we're going to be here till all hours of the night, can we at least order some food? It's 5:15.
That's awesome. All right, man. Let's chat later in Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Yes, sir.
This is when the cream rises to the top. This is when things get hot. This is oven mitt time.
Time now to welcome back a friend of the program here and 2-time Super Bowl champ, Damian Woody. Damian, good to have you with us again.
Same here. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. All right, let's talk about these 4 games this weekend. So obviously, I always like to lean on each analyst's kind of playing days, but we've seen this third matchup, you know, obviously division opponents and then meet in the playoffs before. You were on that 2010 Jets team that beat the Patriots in the playoffs. Weren't 0-2 in the regular season. You split the regular season meetings that year, but at least you understand the concept of a third meeting. What makes you think, if at all, the Bucs can be competitive, maybe even win in New Orleans after the Saints kind of dominated both regular season meetings?
Well, Doug, there's a couple things. Number one, the last time they played each other was back in November, on November 8th. That's over 2 months ago. This is a different Bucs team, particularly on the offensive side of the football. A couple things. Number one, Antonio Brown seems to be a lot more acclimated within this offense, seems to be a lot more in sync with Tom Brady. Obviously, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, those guys seem like they're, you know, pretty healthy and are in sync as well. But I think the biggest improvement is along the offensive line. Those guys up front have done a fantastic job of protecting Tom Brady. Heck, Tom Brady really hasn't been touched in several weeks now. I think that, to me, is the key this go-around against the New Orleans Saints.
You know, it's a great point about the pressure and so much. The Washington really barely got to Brady, and so much was made of Chase Young and all that. I think Brady looks – I mean, you obviously played with him and you played against him. I mean, so sharp with the zip on his balls, just to the untrained eye myself. And then Breeze looks a little like the balls are accurate, but they're a little slower. I think Brady's got the advantage, at least in the head-to-head. That makes me think this matchup is pretty level.
I definitely think that it's pretty even. I do think that the New Orleans Saints feel like they have a psychological edge because they beat them so bad both times. But again, I think that's, that was like a lifetime ago. And I think Tom Brady and company will be ready this go around.
Yeah, it's a great point about 2 months since that meeting because, they talk about it in the quarters each regular season, every four games, and then obviously the playoffs being a different animal. Let's talk about the defending champs because, yes, they were 14-1 going into week 17 before they rested all their starters. But there was a lot of close calls, if you will. Many kind of think the Chiefs are like more than vulnerable, so to speak, with those narrow victories. But maybe others argue they're just kind of bored and waiting for the playoffs. It's hard to dismiss all these wins, right? How would you assess them right now?
So I take a different approach to what I've been seeing from Kansas City. I know what it's like when the year after you win a Super Bowl, everyone literally plays their A game against you. It's their Super Bowl. So no matter what you see on film from prior games, that's not how they're going to play you because they get up for you that way. And that's kind of how I look at how the Kansas City Chiefs have been this year. All these teams are playing their best ball against the Kansas City Chiefs, and it doesn't look as spectacular as years prior because they're facing the defending champs. So I think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be ready, especially after a bye where Andy Reid is the master coming off a bye week.
Yeah, that's true. We talk about it with these sort of marquee teams in other sports, too. You get everyone's best shot, but now that the Chiefs are sort of now ready to give their best shot, we're going to see their A game. So that'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Lamar Jackson had some recent comments. I mean, it's a slow news week, if you will, in the NFL about the snow and things. I'm worried about the Bills' defense. The Colts were like the first team ever, I believe, that gave up 450 yards, no turnovers. Had 450 yards on offense, no turnovers, and didn't win a playoff game. Obviously, the goal-to-goal situations is what did the Colts in and some other key plays, but how do you think Buffalo's defense is going to fare against this Baltimore, this unique rushing style?
I think I'm worried. I'm worried for the Bills, particularly on defense, and here's why. The Baltimore Ravens over the last six games have rushed for more yards than any other team in a six-game span since 1949. Doug, we weren't even a twinkle in our folks' eye at that time. So that's the type of rushing attack that the Baltimore Ravens with Lamar Jackson is going to be bringing up to Buffalo. And, when you look at the Buffalo Bills defense, it's their rush defense that you tend to worry about the most. And Lamar Jackson and company, they're coming in hot.
And it's such a – I got to imagine it puts pressure on the defense. When you can do so well, like the Titans had been doing all game, and then one play when Lamar can just break one for 48-yard house call and do that, that's got to be deflating even for the offense, knowing what you're up against on the other side of the ball.
Well, here's the thing, Doug. Is that a couple things. One, Lamar Jackson is the most dynamic player on the field, and he plays quarterback. And usually when you're talking about a running game, it's usually 10 on 11 because you don't count on the quarterback being part of a rushing attack. But Lamar Jackson is the main component of the rushing attack. So now all bets are off. If you're trying to defend it, it makes it so much harder to try to defend that rushing attack.
Yeah, no, he just put as bettors, we kind of like laugh about, hey, just ask the gambler when he's fourth and ones, do you punt or do all? We like, as a bettor, he puts such fear in me if I bet against him more than any other player. So that there's your answer. He is the most dynamic player because of that.
Correct.
It's like the truth serum. Obviously, the Rams have a chance, but you're looking at a Jared Goff, who historically has been terrible in cold weather, although just two games. But in the playoffs, he has struggled. He's banged up, coming off finger surgery, thumb surgery. You have Aaron Rodgers, been so dominant at home in the postseason in his career. Just in general, he's an MVP, like all likelihood this year. Do the Rams legitimately have a chance to go into Lambeau to face this against this rested Packers team?
They have a chance. I don't think it's a big chance, but they have a chance. Here's a couple reasons why. Obviously, you spoke on it, that Rams defense. I mean, they're the number one defense as far as efficiency is concerned. They have players on all three levels of their defense. They can get after your running game, and they can cover. And obviously, we talk about Aaron Donald in the middle of that line. He's going to be able to wreak havoc. Remember, David Bakhtiari is out for the year. That's a huge blow to that Packers offensive line, and now you got to deal with that front with the Los Angeles Rams. Good luck. And then when you look, flip it on the offensive side of football for the Los Angeles Rams, yes, Jared Goff is compromised, obviously, coming off that surgery on his throwing thumb. I think it's going to have to be a heavy dose of Cam Akers. Cam Akers is really going to have a huge day running the football, and then being able to, you know, play action off of that, and getting Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods and those guys involved in the passing game.
We talk about in the fight game, whether it be UFC or boxing, what's the path to victory, right? If it's an underdog, like, can you get him on the ground? Well, I think the only path to victory is Cam Akers. We saw Dalvin Cook a handful of weeks ago do that in Lambeau, and that's obviously the weakness. Now, whether they can do it enough is another question, but I agree. I'm glad to hear that, because that's the one thing I was thinking of, is the, and then that sets up the play action, obviously makes every throw easier for Goff. So that's good to hear. I like hearing that, because that's the conventional wisdom would suggest that. Damian, awesome as always. You are so fun, and I forgot to tease you about, did you create that hole in your couch that you talked about last weekend with the six games that you just sat?
Man. Oh, man, I got it. Man, let me tell you, man, I think where I sat at is, like, I was sitting on the floor by the end of the weekend. Like, I completely just was diving, swimming in my couch, man. But it was a glorious weekend. How could you be mad at a three day slate of just football? It was fabulous.
Yeah, and the first half of the Colts Bills was just so dramatic with the Colts decisions on not kicking the field goal, and then Josh Allen had the remarkable drive with 96 yards or whatever it was. And I'm like, wow, that's one half. We have 12 of these throughout the weekend.
I can't even imagine what it was like in Vegas with all of those football games.
Yeah. Well, the NFL hit another gold mine, if you will, like thinking about that. One more playoff game in each conference. But thanks so much, Damian. I always love chatting with you. It's good to get your perspective, and always fun catching up as well.
Oh, same here, Doug. Thanks a lot for having me on.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Back now with Mr. Executive Director in Murray, the Prince of Props, got into a little chase mode this weekend. What happened there?
It was sad to see. You know, it should have been an omen right from the start of the weekend, because he sent me a pick he wanted for the Colts Bills game, like after the game had started. And I texted him back, dude, what are you doing? Like that game, I'm watching that game in my office right now. And then it was just like this spiral of the weekend. And he was texting me like, oh my God, DK is going to just bury me on the show next week. and I said, yeah, probably. The only positive I can say is I think I did have a winner on the Colts plus the seven. And we did manage to pull off a winner in the late game for 2,000.
Yeah, a little close to martingaling, but you didn't do it, but it was right. Close.
The weekend could have been a lot worse. I think we only lost 1,600 for the weekend, and that was with just Meltdown City going on. So seven games left for him to rally himself and redeem his name. Plenty of time left.
Okay, so you know, I feel bad because I don't want to be this guy just like limping to the finish line here with this sizable lead. I just didn't love anything. And it happens. And I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. So it's all right. It's all right, Prince of Props. You just might have to lose your moniker. If you know, you're no longer be the prince, you know, soon you're going to lose your title. But we spin it forward. I don't love this card at all. I really like the Rams, the Packers in a teaser. Frankly, I should have done Bama to the Packers. But I was on Bama like team total. I didn't need to do the tease or anything. I just don't know that there's anything to tease with Green Bay, right? Like that's my issue. I could do Kansas City just for the sake of the, you know, fun if the weekend, but you don't want to tease down to four. We know this. Maybe if the number comes down a little bit, maybe Tampa up to 8.5, if it goes to 2.5, something like that, if there's just like steam. I mean, you could do Baltimore.
You're going to see people are going to be teasing Baltimore. People will tease Baltimore up through that key number of 7, and they'll do Baltimore plus 8.5. I almost said it's a low total at 50 because I'm looking at the two totals for Sunday. I guess it's not a low total, but it's lower than some.
I'm worried about the Bills defense. So that's why I think the Baltimore plus 8.5 gives me comfort. And I do think the Packers take care of us. I think Goff stinks, especially in cold weather. He's only played 2 career games, but he's just awful. He's actually got a horrible playoff numbers too. So. But my,
I'm not a big Goff guy.
I'm only going to do, you know what? I'll do 2 plays. I'll do that teaser. So let's do that teaser. Packers down to 0.5. Baltimore up to 8.5. We'll do it for a dime. And let's
I'm sorry.
Do minus 120. Because I think there's other books that do 120. Is that fair? Is that what other books do?
Oh, yeah. No, there's absolutely books in Nevada that do
okay,
it.
That's all I mean. Yeah. Okay.
That's fair. And then I'm going to just dip my toe in the water with – I see a couple of books, South Point, Circa. They've got New Orleans minus 3 flat, minus 110. So I'll do 1,100 to win 1,000 on New Orleans minus 3 against Tampa. And then I'm just going to – do I shut off my phone on Saturday so the Prince can't get at me? Or, you know, I'll be here. I'll be at the Westgate Superbook in my office watching these games. I guess I'll relay that information as it comes in.
Awesome. Awesome. I think that's a smart approach. I got one more play. This one I really like. Cleveland team total over 23.5. I got a minus 05 at William Hill. I like it for a dime as well. I think the Browns will be able to score. I think they got enough weapons. I don't trust their defense at all. I think Mahomes will have a field day, but I think the Browns can run on these Chiefs. And we think running low points or whatever. But I think with both those guys in the backfield, I think Baker will let it rip. I like this matchup against the Kansas City defense.
A lot of firepower on that Cleveland offense. And I can say this, Andy Reid, if you're listening, don't do what Mike Tomlin did against the Browns on Sunday. And I think you're going to see Kansas City moving to the AFC Championship game for the third year in a row.
Patrick Mahomes, if you're listening, don't do what Big Ben did and throw a million interceptions either. That would be good. Yeah. And if the center is watching, do not snap the ball over the head of a 6'6 quarterback.
That's a good start, man. Yeah,
gosh. But with Stefanski back and all that, I trust the Browns. I think they're like battle tested enough. It's not like Arrowhead's going to be rocking or, you know, I think they'll be fine. I think getting 24 points is doable. Now their defense is leaky. That's why I kept saying the Steelers, like I thought the Steelers had a chance to come back in that game. I really did. When they were down 28-0, I'm like, it's not over. But
well, they definitely had a chance when they cut it to 12 in the third quarter, right? I mean, I absolutely they had a chance. And then they got conservative and they made some very poor decisions. They probably still would have lost the game, but they didn't maximize their opportunity. They didn't put the maximum amount of pressure on Cleveland. That's why I fault the coach.
It was bad. A lot of things were bad. They just weren't ready. And they've done this before, right? They did it against Jacksonville a couple years ago, and they haven't won a playoff game since the Killer Bees. So, all right, man, great stuff as always. Really fun catching up and checking out on things, and also spinning forward as well to the weekend. And good luck to the Prince of Props. America waits. America waits on pins and needles to see what the plays will be. And I know Darren, the intern, will be tweeting up a storm about it.
All right, buddy. I will talk to you Saturday. I'll hit you up on Twitter.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Okay, that's going to do it for this edition of Behind the Bets. We'll see what shakes out in the Bonanza. I got that comfortable lead, but as we know, certainly from recent history, things can go off the rails pretty easily. So obviously that is not done. I also want to thank everyone who caught the megacast last Sunday with the Ravens Titans on ESPN Plus. I thought the NFL Live crew was spectacular, as they were in rehearsal. So no surprise there. And then Joe and Tyler and I really had some fun doing that. And we a lot of positive feedback. So we appreciate everyone checking that out. Hopefully there'll be more opportunities in the futures, but certainly a new frontier on the landscape of television. And then obviously getting betting immersed. And I thought it was the right amount. It wasn't 100%. It was just like a nice sliver of the alternate broadcast. So a lot of fun there. Tons of people behind the scenes, and the graphics were spectacular. So really appreciate everyone's feedback and tuning in on that. And, you know, football's dwindling down. We'll get there. We'll get there and we'll get through everything, the pandemic and all that. But at least we have a little bit more football left. So thanks, everyone, for downloading, rating, reviewing, and we'll check back next week.